back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And I know some of you set your alarm clocks so that you can wake up and hear the Abandoned Manitoba segment with Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
Something mysterious today. Tell us, remind us of the clue from last week.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people, including a lot of our faithful listeners, know about my passion for strange and interesting places. So, for example, my good friend Tom Mitchell at Brandon University alerted me to today's topic. It's a secret scientific laboratory that was built deep in the ground under a prominent building, and it was put there over 100 years ago.
Well, first of all, what prominent building are we talking about?
We're talking about the former Central Normal School. Mm-hmm. It's a two-story stone building on William Avenue here in Winnipeg. It was built in 1906 as a teacher training facility. In 1912, 6 years after the building was constructed, a project of the federal government saw a scientific laboratory built three stories under the basement of the building. In other words, deeper than the building was tall.
Wow, interesting. So why was the lab built?
Well, in a nutshell, it was to be an astronomy lab. Now, I know that when
underground?
People think of... Yeah, well, that's it. People think when they think of astronomy, they tend to think of telescopes. But this is not always the case. You know, so back in 1879, an English astronomer named George Darwin, and in case anybody's wondering about that name, yes, he was a son of the famed naturalist Charles Darwin. Hmm. George Darwin, he was studying the gravitational forces between the Earth and the Moon. Now, one of the manifestations of those forces, of course, is our tides. But he wanted to see other things like the deformation of the Earth itself, the actual solid Earth, not the liquid Earth. And so what he was doing was studying very small changes in the movement of a pendulum under the effect of these gravitational forces. Well, unfortunately, because of the nature of his equipment at the time, his experiments failed miserably. But if you jump forward to the early 20th century, astronomers were starting to re-examine Darwin's technique, and they believed that if there was any effect on a pendulum swinging that was exerted by the moon, the easiest way to measure it would be at a site far away from those ocean tides. So in 1911, there was an international group of scientists that proposed to establish three research stations to study this phenomenon. One of them was going to be in Siberia. Mm-hmm. One of them was going to be in South Africa, one in North America. And then I don't know why, but a fourth one was going to be at Paris, France. Well, Canada's chief astronomer at the time, a fellow named Otto Klotz, advocated to build the North American station at Winnipeg. And of course, if you think about it, this is perfect because if you're trying to find a place far away from the ocean tides, well, you can't get much better than Winnipeg. We are right in the smack dab center of the continent.
So what did this lab look like?
Well, a construction contract was awarded to a Winnipeg-based firm, and Otto Klotz arrived here from his office in Ottawa to choose a site for this lab. For reasons that are known, he initially selected the Manitoba Agricultural College. Now, today, it's known as the Asper Jewish Community Campus. Mm-hmm. But later it was moved to the normal school. And to be honest, I really don't know the basis for changing it. Well, anyway, the crew of the construction company excavated the basement of the normal school down a depth of 24 feet. Wow. And you think about it, each floor is about 8 feet. So 24 feet, that's three stories. Down when they got to the bottom, they then built a concrete vault measuring 16 feet by 5 feet. And then to get down to that vault, they had three flights of stairs leading down from a small door that they installed in the floor of the basement. The cost of the construction, well, it doesn't sound like very much, $2,300. But keep in mind, that was over 100 years ago. Today, it would be at least $63,000 they spent just putting in this one little room below the floor of the normal school.
So what happened to this lab? How did it work out?
Well, unfortunately, the lab didn't turn out quite as well as Klotz had hoped. You know, he arrived in Winnipeg again in mid-1912 to inspect the finished work, and he found that the stairs leading down to that vault were very narrow. So, for example, he had to take off his coat and squeeze down through that little door and down these apparently very narrow stairs. And when he got to the bottom, what did he find? the new laboratory was flooded waist deep in water.
Of course, if you're going down that far, you're going to hit water, right?
Anybody who's ever excavated into the ground here in Winnipeg knows that, you know, the water table is not that far from the surface. You know, and so routinely construction projects find that water flows into excavations and requires frequent pumping. You know, I'm told, for example, that this was the case when the recent Manitoba Hydro headquarters was built along Portage Avenue. And I wouldn't be surprised that they have to continue pumping even today because it's, say, just so deep in the ground relative to the water table.
So what happened to the lab?
Well, I think Klotz probably realized that water was always going to be a problem. And he decided, therefore, that Ottawa, where he, of course, was based, although it was a poorer site than Winnipeg, because, you know, it wasn't quite in the center of the continent,
right,
would suffice. And he would build this lab there instead. So the lab under the normal school was abandoned, having never been used.
Never used at all.
Ugh. Not at all. They didn't even install the equipment. You know, but it seems the decision to abandon the lab was not shared with the people in Winnipeg. So you jump forward 3 years, 1915, the superintendent of schools, Daniel McIntyre, of course, for whom a high school today is named,
right,
wrote to the federal government to complain because this lab had created a persistent water problem in the basement of the normal school. And he thought that this would jeopardize the health of the occupants, having all this moisture down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted that the lab would be filled with soil. Well, I guess the newspapers caught wind of his letter and they came and they interviewed the caretaker of the building, who claimed that he had been promised a salary of $5 a month. And again, it doesn't seem like much in those dollars, but quite a bit today, to look after the lab. And so as a result, he had been using an electric pump for at least 2 years to pump out the water. And his argument, he was owed 2 years of back pay that he just hadn't ever received.
It's $120 bucks.
So, you know, I happen to be a little dubious about just how much the caretaker actually knew about the situation. Because, for example, he claimed that the lab had never been equipped because the fellow responsible for buying the equipment had stolen the money and run away. Well, this wasn't the case. I mean, it was just Klotz had decided not to spend the money because he just didn't think the lab was, you know, desirable.
Crazy story. So what about this Darwin project? What happened to that?
Well, they went back to Ottawa. They did construct a second lab there, and apparently it worked well. Although, you know, I haven't been able to find out if Klotz was able to carry out measurements that answered the question that Darwin had first posed. But interestingly enough, that space that they constructed was used right up until the early 1960s, at least. You know, so it did at least have a long, useful life.
So I'll ask you the question that everybody's wondering. Is that lab still under the normal school building?
Well, as far as I've been able to determine, yes, it's still there. But I suspect it probably filled right up with water. I wasn't able to find any mention of the government acting to fill it with soil. That's the way Daniel McIntyre had wanted it to be.
Right.
But the building itself stopped being the Central Normal School in 1942. And 50 years later, 1992, it underwent a substantial renovation because, you know, it was no longer a normal school. In fact, it was being turned into residential space, which is what it is today. I was curious if the entrance, you know, that hole in the floor, that little doorway, if it was still accessible. So a few weeks ago, I managed to arrange a visit to the basement with a friend of mine. And we walked around the basement. We checked a lot of the spaces that we thought there might be access to the floor. Well, it turns out none of the original rooms were intact. They had renovated the building so thoroughly that, you know, there were fairly modern walls in the basement.
Uh-huh.
We looked in several places, including in one mechanical room, and we thought we had struck gold. We found a metal plate on the floor. We thought, aha, this is it. This is the entrance to the lab. Well, we worked away at it. We managed to lift the metal plate and we found a shallow sump pit. And it was just for draining water. But of course, what that suggests is they do still have a water problem in this building. But no sign of three flights down. So my friend went back to the drawing board, went back and looked through some archival records. He found plans relating to that renovation back in the 1990s. And apparently at that time, they had covered the entire basement floor with 5 inches of concrete.
Wow.
And I guess the idea was to level it off in some way and make it nice and smooth. Well, of course, what that probably means is that the lab entrance is now covered right. with concrete. So I suspect, therefore, well, it's going to be inaccessible for a good long time, at least until somebody tears up that concrete, maybe someday in the distant future.
Well, who knows what's flowing under there right now?
Yeah, that's right.
It's a great looking building, though. They did a great job renovating it.
It is. And it's nice to see that a building like that gets reused. That's yeah. a good example of, you know, if you take old buildings, you can reuse them in some creative way. That's the thing to do with old buildings.
Wow. Really interesting this week, Gordon. Thanks a lot for that. Tell us what the clue is for next week.
Well, you know, when a person talks about abandoned things, such as we do here, occasionally their status changes. You know, so for example, we might talk about a building that is subsequently demolished. Well, next week, I'm going to bring our listeners up to date on a few changes that have occurred since our last update episode over a year ago.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, we'll see you next week then, Gordon.
Talk again.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.